Today on Straight Talk Africa, the 26th session of the African Union Summit in Addis Ababa. The theme of this year's gathering, human rights, was overshadowed by discussions of terrorism, the ongoing political crisis in Burundi, and a call by some leaders for the AU to develop a roadmap for the withdrawal of African nations from the Hague-based International Criminal Court, the ICC. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, February 3rd. I am Shaka Salih.
Well, happy Wednesday to you, Shaka, and hello to you, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the 26th session of the African Union Summit.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on the topic. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
The African Union Summit in Addis Ababa brought together heads of state and government. However, political conflicts relegated the theme of this year's summit on human rights, with a special focus on women's rights, to the back seat. My colleague Esther Githui Yuwat has more on the story.
There was nothing ordinary about the 26th session of the African Union Summit, which saw a change of guard when longtime Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe handed over the Continental Body's chairmanship to yet another long-serving president, Idris Deby of Chad. Leaders focused on the continued political violence in Burundi, the political crisis and human rights violations in South Sudan, terrorism that has afflicted many countries in Africa, a proposal to withdraw from the International Criminal Court, ICC, among other critical issues. Outgoing AU chairman Robert Mugabe called on fellow African leaders to combine efforts to fight terrorism in all its manifestations.
Terrorism has become a major scourge and challenge in many parts of Africa, thus negatively affecting the peace and safety of our people.
Somali Islamist group Al-Shabaab has wreaked havoc in Somalia and neighboring Kenya. However, Kenya's president Uhuru Kenyatta says his country will remain committed as part of the African Union force to fight the terrorist group. On January 15th, Al-Shabaab militants killed more than 100 Kenyan soldiers in an army camp in Somalia.
Our soldiers' blood will not be shed in vain. We are fighting a global war that requires a global response.
Speaking during an official tour of Kenya, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari, whose country and others in the West African region have been afflicted by the Boko Haram terrorist group, voiced his concern.
Nigeria has had her fair share of dastardly acts committed by Boko Haram.
On the political crisis that has devastated Burundi for more than 9 months since President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to run for a controversial third term, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon told the African Union summit that urgent action was needed to protect human rights and dignity.
The longer this situation continues, the more people will be killed and affected.
Chadian President Idris Deby, who is now the African Union chairman, asked the continental body to intervene and stem the violence in Burundi, as well as the political crisis in South Sudan.
C'est le cas pour le Burundi.
In the cases of Burundi and South Sudan, the African Union must pursue its efforts so that this can find a way to peace. This depends on ending violence.
The African Union Summit also set up an ambitious plan for the next 50 years, dubbed Agenda 2063. AU Commission Chairman Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma addressed women's rights, saying,
"We must continue to place our people and their basic human rights at the center of Agenda 2063.
Agenda 2063 hopes to achieve peace, unity, and prosperity for Africa, but it is already being tested by political strife and terrorism. AU has backed off from sending a force to intervene in the Burundi crisis, where the government is categorical that such a force will be seen as invasion and treated as such. Esther Githu-Ewart, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, for that report. We are expected to be joined by the deputy chairperson of the African Union, a gentleman known as Elastus Mwencha, and he's expected to be joining us from Addis Ababa via telephone link-up, but due to circumstances beyond our control, we have not been able to connect with him. We'll bring him later whenever he can join us. In the meantime, of course, I have the honor and privilege of introducing to you Emira Woods, an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies here in Washington, and Ni Akwete, executive director at the African Immigrant Caucus. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say, of course, as I often say, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to be able to host you again on Straight Talk Africa.
The honor is ours, really. It's a joy to be with Straight Talk Africa and to consistently stand with you to make sure that the talk is straight and clear and that all voices are heard regarding Africa policy.
You're most welcome, Emira, because I remember with nostalgia when, of course, you joined us to celebrate the 10 years of the program, and guess what? We are now 15.
Amazing, yeah, how time goes. Well, we congratulate you.
Thank you so much.
Team.
What about you, Dean?
Well, let me say happy 2016, and I echo everything that Emira said, and thanks for having us.
You're most welcome. And of course, you've been watching what's going on the African continent. We had a summit which ended up on Sunday. How did you see it? It was supposed to be focusing on human rights, and specifically focusing on women's human rights. Why should there be human rights and women's human rights? I thought it would just be human rights.
Well, without a doubt, women hold up half the sky, as they say, yeah? So you cannot talk about human rights without talking about women's rights. And also, you cannot talk about women's rights and feminism without talking about human rights, because expanding rights for all, those inalienable rights, actually benefits the entire society, whether it's children or people who are marginalized groups, LGBTI groups, who have been long stigmatized are included when we talk about human rights. Huh? It's a social justice call that all must really uphold throughout the continent. So I'm glad it was spotlighted, but unfortunately it was sidelined, to be quite frank. Sidelined by developments on the continent, sidelined by issues of conflict, by issues of the need to put attention to peace and to human security matters.
Interesting. What about you, Ni? Overshadowed by political...
Well, you conflict. Know, I'm a little inclined to be slightly contrarian, because what overshadowed it? A string of security crises. Burundi boiling, South Sudan. We didn't even much mention, I mean, at least the official communiques didn't mention what happened with Somalia and the killing of the Kenyans. There are so many security crisis points on the continent. And the reason, it seems to me, it's how it's framed. I think Addis can do a better job. Because I bet you, if you scratch below the surface, a lot of the victims of those crises are women and children. So, and of course, what is the very first human right of anybody? Is life. And therefore, when you have crises like this, and you want to deal with them quickly, you don't want Burundi to go over the edge, you want to bring South Sudan closer to a solution, you want to deal with all these others, if I were in Addis, I would be couching it as, yes, you know, we may not mention women a lot, but in fact, we are hard trying to protect everybody's human rights. And if I might, I think the reason, I mean, your first question to Emira is great. Why are we talking about women's rights and human rights? Aren't they the same? They are the same. But the history of the world in any country, in this country, across our continent, is that there hasn't been equality. So when you are now trying to bring equality, you have to focus on certain segments. But it covers everybody.
So basically, you can't really talk about human rights unless
You talk about the fundamentals, which are probably peace and stability.
Without a doubt, yeah? It's assuring that the rights for all to have that basic measure of human decency, to be able to live their lives freely with dignity, with assurance that they won't be killed in their own homes, you know, that they won't be pushed from their homes, as so many are, either as refugees or as migrants. Huh? And so it is that basic right of life. Then it's liberty, it's the pursuit of happiness. It is those inalienable rights that are enshrined in whether it's the UN Declaration or in constitutions around the world that must be protected. And so the African Union carving out a space, you know, for this meeting, the 26th session, to focus on these issues was timely. I think it is unfortunate that there aren't, you know, sort of a set a program of action, as was intended, coming out of the session to actually address these issues. Because in a fundamental way, I think Nia and I agree, that when you pay attention to human rights and human dignity, you actually avert some of the very crises we see unfolding before us. You know, let's remember the conflicts, whether it's Somalia, you know, started with people demanding self-determination. Somalis demanding an opportunity to freely choose their leaders and hold those leaders accountable. Those rights of political participation, those rights of democracy, are really enshrined in all human rights protocols and conventions. And it is those rights being undermined that often lead to the conflict.
It's very interesting, Amira, that you mentioned a very important word, actually, and that is accountability. How do you, for example, respond to some people who say that even in a lot of African countries where there might not be war, there is a lot of evidence on the ground, in fact, that there is no peace? Because they argue that peace is not merely, for example, the absence of war, the absence of people with arms fighting one another, but rather it is the presence of social justice, accountability, and reconciliation. Do you agree with those?
Yeah, without a doubt. You see that when those basic fundamentals are overlooked, are undermined, the right of people to organize, you know, in opposition groups, the right of people to freely choose their governments. You see country after country where presidents are essentially enshrining themselves in office, changing constitutions to extend their terms. You know, and I think we have to say it's quite alarming when you see the African Union being handed from President Mugabe to President Deby of Chad, who himself has a deplorable record in these areas of human rights and of respect for the rule of law. I think what we have to say is that the African Union must look to its own principles. You know, there are these peer review mechanisms that the African Union set up when they established, they shifted from the Organization of African Union to the African Union with a deliberate effort to open up the democratic space, to allow in civil society, to allow in women's groups, opposition groups, to create a Pan-African parliament. All of these instruments to democratize the continent, very much to be applauded, but essentially at times have been sort of stripped of their power, of their voice to determine the future. So I think we've got to go back to those fundamentals on the continent, to bring measures of accountability, to create opportunities where people are once again able to exercise their basic rights to human dignity.
Inalienable rights.
Inalienable rights.
In fact, birthrights, really.
Without a doubt. It's those basics of food, of health, of education, of housing, you know, that many in the liberation days fought for, fought the end of colonialism because of a demand for those rights to be upheld. And now you see decades later, those rights are unfortunately pushed aside too often.
Me. From your experience, does the African Union really, as it is set up, does it have the mandate, for example? Does it have the power, really, given that it has no sovereign powers? That is an institution, in fact, that is perhaps a reflection of the total sum of most member countries which happen to be undemocratic?
I think you actually read my mind. I think the African Union has a role and it has a lot of influence, but nowhere everything that is needed. This is actually, I think, teamwork. I think one of the things that we need to encourage is civil society within different countries. I mean, I'm sure we'll get to Burundi. One of the issues is if you are going to send African Union troops into a country that doesn't agree, you have a problem. The African Union doesn't have its own troops. It has to ask for them. And they are going to a hostile territory. And so what they can do from Addis, even if all of them behave perfectly, is limited. There has to be civil society movements on the ground, the voters in every country. The African Union does have a role. But of course, they are human. They don't behave perfectly. They are actually a club of presidents, a club of heads of state. They look out for each other. They use excuses. Some of the people who are against the troops into Burundi are thinking, well, if I vote for them to go into Burundi next, it might be me. So they cover themselves. So I do think the African Union is important, is necessary, it has a role, but the power that it has is not, we shouldn't look to them to do everything. We need to actually be working with civil society groups all across the continent in every country to generate power and movements from the bottom up, because they people on the ground have the power to throw out leaders. It will be a little dicey for the African Union to say to a head of state, you've been there 30 years, we are coming to throw you out.
So it can actually talk the talk, but can't actually quite walk the talk.
That's true. And in fact, I have to give them a little credit. You know, since they became the African Union, they have actually said they took one step. I think we need the second. But the first good step was, if you come to power by unconstitutional means, you are not welcome. And that has dampened the temptation for leaders to take over by military coups. It has dampened that, but they also need to make sure that those who are sitting tight get off the seat of power.
We'll come back to that, of course, because the leaders that you are talking about are very, very smart, very clever. They don't have to use the AK-47. Yeah. They can actually rig the elections.
Yes.
And stay in power. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag, and we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, of course, Esther Givui Uwat, and this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Welcome back, and today, of course, we're talking about the African Union Summit. Now, we're talking about how the AU at least has reached a point where if some colonel takes power by means of AK-47, they are not going to do business as usual. In fact, you have to give it credit, especially with what happened in Egypt, when Mohamed Morsi was undemocratically removed from power. They recognized the fact that that was a coup, even though we know that some very important country in the West did not believe that.
Yes.
But what about the fact that Again, some of these African leaders have become very, very astute. They are very, very smart. They don't need to use the AK-47 anymore.
Yes.
In fact, they can use a pen.
Yes.
They can use, for example, fake elections. They can use fake referendums. They can also change constitutions, frankly, when they are still in power in order to benefit personally. Why can't the AU also now take up that issue and say, no, if you do that, we are not going to recognize you because, in fact, what you're doing is committing treason, violating your own country's constitution. What about that, Emira?
Well, I think that would be a step forward. I mean, clearly the AU having in place this lack of recognition for coups and coup plotters is important that we applaud that, but it's got to be taking a step further to ensure that constitutions aren't manipulated and political processes aren't manipulated to keep leaders entrenched in power. So it's got to be the African Union with forward-looking strategies. Clearly, the African Union has succeeded in those forward-looking strategies when it comes to the UN Security Council. The African Union has put out, and it came out of this summit again, that changing the membership of the UN Security Council is an urgent matter for the continent, and ensuring that there is African representation in the permanent seats at the UN Security Council is long overdue. So clearly the African Union is able to provide that kind of leadership globally. And that's important. It's got to be applauded and strengthened to make sure that it goes from just the speeches mm-hmm. to actually implementation, right? Mm-hmm. But internally, there have to also be forward-looking strategies to ensure that the will of the people throughout the continent is actually respected in the leadership that comes to power now and into the future.
When you talk about the will of the people, what exactly do you mean? Because even some of these dictators tell you that power belongs to the people.
Well, you have also some that say, you know, they are destined to be in power, and without them in power, the country will fall apart. And you have others who have said over the years that they will rule even if they have to rule over the trees. You have had these comments over the years. Huh? Mm-hmm. So I think what we have to recognize is that, you know, whether it is opposition leaders, it's trade unions, it's youth movements, you have now technology that is expanding the space through which people express their will. But far too often, those expressions of popular sentiment are being overlooked, overshadowed, undermined, manipulated. The political space is shrinking throughout the continent, whether it's newspapers being closed and targeted or civil society organizations being closed and targeted. You know, these efforts to subvert the democratic process, to subvert the popular will, have to be stopped. And so I think what we're calling for really is an African Union that stands with the majority of those on the continent who are demanding transparency, who are demanding accountability, who are demanding that governments are actually servant leaders, that they are in service to their citizens, in service to the needs of their people, and not for their own personal aggrandizement.
Very interesting. Nia Akweta, I have to admit that Emira is perhaps both an optimist and obviously somebody who means so well. Because when you look, for example, at the fact that the African Union has a very interesting clause, which is no indifference in the affairs of member countries, which was very different from the institution that preceded it, the OAU, which had the other clause of saying no interference in the internal affairs of member countries. Now, when you talk about that and you see what is happening in Burundi, you had a situation where the African Union from the beginning has actually been saying, no, we can't do business with Pierre Nkurunziza. Unless, of course, he meets his people, goes through a dialogue and negotiations and stuff like that, and stops whatever political crisis obtains in Burundi. They had identified, they said, 5,000 troops to be deployed in Burundi with or without the acceptance of the government in Bujumbura. What happened?
I think what happened was that in December, when the idea was floated, it was floated by the Peace and Security Council of the African Union, which is a committee made up of 15 countries. And the final approval has to come from the General Assembly, which is all 54 members meeting and having taken the decision by two-thirds majority, even the Peace and Security Council. So what we have been reading in the news had been floated, had been prepared, but the two-day meeting that we just had Saturday and Sunday was supposed to approve it. And we heard that even in the Peace and Security Council, there were a number of countries who were saying, we are not sure this is a good idea, and I think for two reasons. Number one, this would have been the very first time that it's ever done. And so some countries were worried, for good reasons and bad, about setting that precedent. Mm-hmm. But the second was that, you know, it was said 5,000. No country had actually pledged soldiers. And the UN would have had the privilege of providing the money and looking at the budget. So the countries that will provide soldiers, the question was, if Burundi disagrees and says it will look at them as an invading force, are you going to send your troops? Because you know before they land, there will be shooting, there will be fighting. So those two dangers caused a number of countries behind the scenes to say, well, we can't approve this. And the General Assembly also, the 54 leaders, heads of state, did not approve it because they were afraid that this will lead to fighting right away and their people will be killed. Now, we found out some of the countries that did not want to approve, Egypt and Gambia, and I believe Equatorial Guinea.
Very interesting. And of course, you also happen to know that the Peace and Security Council that you are talking about is funded not by Africans, but by the development partners.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
In fact, in as far as this issue was concerned of deploying 5,000 troops to Burundi, the developing partners were on the same page.
Yes.
With the Peace and Security Council.
Yes.
But what about the entire African Union, actually, who actually funds it? Look at the headquarters, the beautiful, yes, you know, headquarters in Addis Ababa, for example.
Built by the Chinese.
From Beijing. Now, is the African Union really people-centered, as sometimes we are told, or is it, in fact, leadership-centered?
You know, I think that it's human nature. They are leadership-centered. My view is, you know, especially with leadership and political leaders, politicians, you have to treat them as people who can't help themselves. And you have to hold them accountable against their wishes. So there are certain things that we shouldn't leave to them to do just because they have a good conscience. We have to have checks and balances. We have to force them. The saying I've heard here is hold their feet to the fire. They might not want to do certain things. You have to force them. And if I might say, you know, you mentioned the development partners. As we've been talking, I was wondering whether I should throw this in. The development partners are these powerful countries around the world. They have their own agendas, and therefore, they support bad leaders. It's been an obsession of mine, what they call friendly tyrants. For 50 years, there have been powerful countries that support dictators, and when you point out these are dictators, they say, that's all right, they do what we want.
For example,
the U.S. Right now, as we speak, the U.S. support, we mentioned Egypt. President Sisi, the elections that he held, the presidential elections and the parliamentary elections are all questionable. And I'm not just the one saying. I mean, we have democracy experts and we have democracy practitioners. We know the good democracy when we see it. So you can go around the country. We've mentioned General Kagame and what is done with the elections. That's nobody's idea of a democracy. Uganda is coming up. All these are close allies of the United States, and they are dictators, and they get U.S. support. So the other quick thing I'll add is, Emira and I are members of the African diaspora here. I have always thought that we are now taxpayers and citizens in some of these powerful countries. We have a right. In fact, we have an obligation to push hard and say supporting dictators in Africa is not good for Africa, and it's not good for the United States, and we are American taxpayers.
Very interesting, very interesting. Of course, one could perhaps be tempted to say that in situations where you would expect the primary stakeholders in the affairs of Africa, as far as they are concerned, they are not in fact being really supported by the Africans or the primary stakeholders. The development partners have since perhaps, in fact, occupied the role of the primary stakeholders on the continent. Is that the way you see it?
Well, I think we have to begin to put forward new ways of thinking for the African Union and help the African Union to kind of position itself differently in order for it to actually reach its Agenda 2063, right, in less than 50 years' time. One of those areas is thinking about the resources of the continent differently. Well, we've got to begin to think about issues like taxation differently, issues like flows of resources, illicit financial flows outside the continent. The African Union can begin to set up instruments through which it is able to generate resources from the continent differently in order for it to run its mechanisms, whether it's an African standby force, long discussed but never fully realized, well, you know, or many of these other mechanisms that have been envisioned.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro herself. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding and fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan.
We hear from someone called Africa Wake Up from Tanzania, who writes, "The African Union should also have touched on fundamental issues such as democracy in Africa. The continental body should support serious interventions to remove leaders that are constantly abusing human rights and fail to let democracy take its course."
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. As we've mentioned, the African Union wrapped up its summit in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, on Sunday. The theme of this year's gathering, human rights, was overshadowed by discussions on terrorism and the ongoing unrest in Burundi. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, asking, in addition to Burundi, what other issues or topics should the African Union be most concerned about? Before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using all our social media platforms to communicate to us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA African Union Summit. And if you haven't yet, please do follow us on Twitter. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Izimzi, who writes that the AU should talk about how to end colonial borders to pacify insurgency. Another one from Sambatia, he also tweets this, that dictatorship in countries and protecting African constitutions, this is a vital point to be discussed. And while we're at it, let's take a look at another one, last one this time, from Emmanuel Ebenezer, who says that the AU must be concerned with intra-Africa trade and sufficient power generation to light Africa as well as running machines. Well, let's now turn to our Facebook fans and go to a comment from David Twinamasco. I'm sure I said the name right. He's writing from Kampala in Uganda. And he says, besides the crisis in Burundi and South Sudan, the issue of poverty, famine, climate change, and good governance should be among the current concerns of our continent. Well, Shaka and guests, pertinent points made here by the various views, your take.
Very interesting, Ni Akwete, especially the gentleman who asked about the idea of eliminating these artificial colonial boundaries. You come from Ghana, and I have been to the border of Ghana and Togo, where, in fact, they give you a drink in the living room. You are in Ghana, and when you go for dinner, you are literally sitting in Togo.
That is so true. And I have to tell you, I mean, I think the way Africa's borders were drawn is a piece of history we should never forget. I mean, I have been telling friends of mine, I was talking to an Ivorian, and I said, you know, the border between Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire was not drawn by Ghanaians or Ivorians. I was saying to a Burkinabe yesterday, it was not drawn in between Ghana and Burkina Faso by Ghanaians or Burkinabe. It was drawn by the British and the French and the Germans. And they did it for a specific purpose, to carve up Africa. Shaka, I know that you know quite a bit about Ghana and about Dr. Nkrumah. I can tell you, when I was a little boy in school, one of the first big words I learned was balkanization. Mm. Almost every week, Dr. Nkrumah will talk about balkanization. Africa was being chopped up into 54 countries, so they will keep us weak. So to come back to the point that our brother made, I think it is so true. We have to find effective ways to eliminate the borders and bring our peoples together, because these borders divide us up. And if we get free movement, can we move towards fewer, bigger countries? Just by that, we will have much more respect and much more power in the world. So I agree wholeheartedly. We have to find feasible ways of doing that.
Those borders reflect someone else's interests.
Yes.
Not the interests of the indigenous Africans. Mariama, do we have more reaction from the audience, please?
Well, yes, maybe we should have our own version of the Berlin conference, although I don't know what capital we're going to choose. I'll say Dakar, but I guess my friends from Ghana, Uganda, and Liberia, you guys will fight me for that. But let's move on to more comments. This time we'll go to a posting from Bamwe Sige Rugunda. He's actually writing from Germany, speaking of the Berlin conference. And he says that the AU should be concerned with building a strong regional policy for both socioeconomic and political development and setting regional strategies, goals, and priorities for integration. One more post from Raymond Kigongo. He says that if the African Union can compel African presidents to respect term limits, they will have solved many of Africa's problems. Trust me. Well, Shaka, should we trust this guy? Once again, Shaka and guests, your take on these comments.
Very interesting. I think that we have a real doctor for that here, and she's called Emira Woods.
Regional integration is our only hope. Huh? As a Pan-Africanist, I think for many of us, we've known this for quite some time. I think the liberation leaders knew this as well. It is together that we're stronger. And so I think thinking about infrastructure, whether it's roads or telecommunications or, all of the infrastructure that's needed in our countries to be able to have people as they have for decades, for centuries, go easily across borders, working together. I think this is our real test of an African Union. I mean, when you think about the African Union, remember it was the Sirte Declaration. Huh? It was put together in Libya, in Sirte, Libya, with a vision of a Pan-Africanist orientation that would bring regional integration economically, that would bring a common currency, that would bring a common trade union, and not trade and all of the issues around commerce together. So I think it is that vision that is yet to be realized. And it's that vision that we must continue to hold up. It is also a vision that many in civil society are fighting for. If you think about the environmental rights movement, the environmental rights movement fighting in this UN conference in Paris, it was a group of Africans pushing African governments that actually got the UN to focus on this 1.5 degree, no more than a 1.5 degree increase in terms of global warming and climate change. It is civil society throughout the continent coming together, working together, strategizing together, that pushed the governments to collectively take a stance that actually could save the planet, at least could move us in a better direction. So I think it is thinking about these issues of regional integration, thinking about the fundamentals of Pan-Africanism in a way that helps us to concretely put in place not only policies, but infrastructure in a way that brings that integration. That will be our way of unleashing our full force, unleashing our fullest human creativity throughout the continent.
I hear you. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Thank you, Shaka, and thank you to our guest for weighing in and shedding a light into our audience's contributions. Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll focus on the rising concerns over the global spread of the Zika virus. Join guest host Esther Githui Ewart, myself and guest as we discuss the Zika virus. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and today we are talking about the African Union Summit. Our distinguished guests are Emile Woods, an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, and Ni Akwete, executive director at the African Immigrant Caucus. Again, Emile and Ni, of course, it's always a pleasure to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
It is our pleasure.
You're most welcome. What about the other issue that was also very prominent at the summit? We're talking about the elephant in the room, which pretty much reflects the issue of the abuse of human rights on the continent. We're talking about the International Criminal Court.
Yes.
You had Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and some of his colleagues calling upon their colleagues,
yes,
to withdraw,
yes,
from the ICC.
I think...
Is it a good thing for Africa to withdraw, and yet a lot of the member states, actually, of the ICC are from Africa, about a third. And the last time I checked, nobody put an AK-47, frankly, on them. I thought they meant well. What happened?
I think, in fact, this is a very important issue.
Mm.
I think in that situation, the consensus of the leaders in the African Union was wrong when they allowed themselves to be persuaded by the likes of the leaders of Kenya and Rwanda and others. And I think Rwanda stands out for me, yes, because they actually supported sending a warlord to the ICC, and then having realized that they might come to heads of state. Then they turn around and make what I think is one of the most bogus arguments I've ever heard. The idea that the ICC, because it has tried Africans so far, is anti-African. I actually look at it the other way. This is an international body that is actually saying, just because you are a head of state, you cannot kill poor Africans. I think
you're
nothing.
Not above the law.
We are not above the law.
Right.
A poor African being killed by a head of state, we will still try and hold you accountable. Now, of course, it would have been great if the African Union had set up a body that can do this. But as a fallback position, I'm all for the ICC. I know that international representatives of civil society, including some brilliant African law professors on this side of the ocean, argued that the Africans' leaders are wrong. So they were being very self-serving, and I think their argument is very, very wrong. And it reminded me, when we were talking earlier about what things we can expect from the from these leaders, is to realize that they are very self-serving. They are in a club of leaders, and therefore I'm so glad about the last point Emira made about civil society, which I've been struggling to make. We cannot leave everything to the leaders. Civil society actually is doing its work, and it must ratchet it up and force them to do certain things, because left to themselves, they will not do it.
I think, in fairness to African leaders, we should point out the fact that a majority, if not all the cases so far at The Hague, the ICC, are basically from Africa.
Yes.
But we can also say that majority of those cases were, in fact, voluntarily taken there by African governments. Mm-hmm. So when you have a problem with somebody who is of presidential pedigree, why does it suddenly become a problem? Who is really Africa? Is Africa an African president? Or is Africa one of the more than 1 billion human beings on the continent?
So, Shaka, clearly the International Criminal Court should be, as its first word indicates, international, right? So it took some time, and it's international pressure, including pressure from the Global South, both civil society and governments, to create the International Criminal Court. So clearly, we're creating an institution for the 21st century and beyond. Mm-hmm. It is flawed. It should not only be focused on Africa. It is an international criminal court. It must bring accountability to regions all over the world.
Look at Syria, for example.
Exactly.
Look at Iraq.
There should be, whether it's the United States under Bush, you know, or, you know, you could name any number of countries. Yeah. Israel and Palestine comes to mind as well. There are a number of countries that are violating international law, that are violating human dignity. And it should, as an international criminal court, hold everyone accountable, without a doubt. So I think the concerns are actually valid. It should not only be Africa. But that doesn't mean, as you said, what is it, that you throw out the baby with the bathwater, right? You perfect the mechanism of international accountability. You make sure that it is international and not solely focused on one region of the world, that it brings accountability, that no one on this planet is above the law if they are undermining fundamental rights of their people or others on this planet. So I think, you know, it is incumbent upon us to say, yes, you know, the concerns are valid, but let's take those concerns and direct them at changes within the international mechanism so that an international criminal court serves the need of all in this human family for now and for the future.
So that we can also at least reflect the concerns and the tragedy, frankly, of the victims.
Yes.
Nobody seems to be on the side of the victims anymore.
Shaka, you see, that is my point. I think Emira is right about it should be international, and it is not, and that is a weakness that should be corrected. But in the meantime, what I like is, for a long time in history, Africans are killed with impunity. This is one of the first times where we've turned a page and we said, even if we cannot try all the perpetrators who kill people in Latin America, in the Middle East, we are starting to send the message that open season on African lives is over. Even if you are an African president, we can't try everybody, but we will try you and let the message go out that killing Africans with impunity is over.
Now, talking about going international, being international, why don't we ourselves, in fact, go international? to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Tafa from Ghana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, Shaka. Good evening.
I am hugely terrific. How are you today?
I'm good, Shaka. I'm good. My greetings to your guests in the studio.
Thank you very much, but good is not good enough, man. You have to be hugely terrific.
Thank you very much, Shaka. I'm terrific too. Shaka, honestly speaking, I was disappointed with the attitude of the African leaders. The meeting just ended in Addis Ababa. My humble opinion is that it's just a waste of resources. They just went there to just squander our small resources we have. Shaka, let me do this comparison. When you compare to when the Milosevic was killing Europeans, you quickly have a NATO organizing themselves when there to protect innocent civilians in European countries. But in Africa, you have a leader killing his people, but you have the African leaders, because some of them, the majority of them benefited from this shifting of political goalposts. So there's no way they will take action against the Burundian leader. So that is the problem we are facing, Shaka. You have a people who always want to shift the post to remain in power. How can you expect Museveni or Kagame or you name them to go and sit down and talk about what is happening in Burundi? Because they are also a beneficiary of that. And Shaka, one thing, I heard people talk about civil society group. Shaka, once you look at the civil society group in Africa, my countryman, Akwete, will agree with me. Majority of them have been compromised. Either they are in the pocket of government, or some of them, few of them also are following the opposition. So if they're also behaving this way, who do we have to talk on our behalf, Shaka?
Thank you.
Is the problem we are facing in the country. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, Tafa. Well spoken. Let's go to the other side of the continent, and that is Uganda in East Africa. Good evening, Samuel. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Ndugu Shaka. How are you?
I am hugely terrific, Ndugu Sam.
Let me move to Emira Woods. Madam Woods, if the African Union cannot act on Burundi as it did to Somalia, then how about the question from the diaspora who can say, wait a minute, you've done it in Somalia and have failed to move to Burundi. Should the United Nations Security Council be justified to pass a resolution to deploy peacekeeping forces to Burundi? Thank you, Madam Woods, and thank you, Shaka.
Thank you very much, Sam. It's all yours, Emira.
Well, thank you, Samuel, for that question. I think clearly, the African Union, it's being looked to act when it comes to Burundi. I think they cannot continue to pass this buck down the road. Now is the time to act. It is urgent. When we saw the lives being lost back in December, according to the human rights advocates, at least, 80 in one weekend alone in December in Burundi, that the African Union must act. And I think it is incumbent on them to act. Whether it is Burundi or also Rwanda, you have now quite a few, DR Congo and Uganda, where this question of term limits is at the forefront. It is perhaps Burundi that has gone the furthest in terms of actually attacks on innocent civilians. But clearly, this is a critical issue for the continent at this time, and it is incumbent on the African Union to act. Whether or not the UN Security Council should take a role, I think we have to give the African Union the time and space to actually do its job. And if that is not done, then in the interest of protecting people, we can look to other international means. Clearly, human rights violations are an affront to human dignity across the planet, and the UN has also a role to play when the local bodies do not do their job. But I think we're still at a stage where we need to push, encourage, cajole, make sure that the African Union does its proper job in taking the leadership that's needed to defend the rights of the people of Burundi.
We should point out, by the way, to be fair to the government in Bujumbura, that
under no circumstances has Burundi actually shifted the constitutional political goalposts. It has not, in fact, violated its constitution. It basically tweaked the constitution. What it probably violated was what is called the Arusha Peace Accords. Let's go to Tanzania. Good evening, Lenganasa from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka and your colleagues.
I am hugely terrific, and they look like they're equally terrific here, too.
Yes, sir.
What is your question, sir?
Yes, Shaka, my comment is concerning the African Union.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, I think the Union needs absolute reforms in the way of thinking and the policies that are guiding the Union, because now they are like in letting other continents, while the African continent has peculiar challenges that are facing it. And one of the challenges that I see coming upfront is the problem of the leadership in Africa. The leaders in Africa have developed a semi-dictatorship kind of leadership, in which they use democratic means and democratic organs to manipulate the way they stay in power, but actually they are not democratic. They are absolute dictators hiding behind democratic institutions and pretending that they are practicing. Like in Zanzibar, you can see one person leading one country for more than 10 years and still wants to continue, while the people have expressed their opinion, but the government is willing to use the power, to use the police, to use other means to make sure that they sustain the same person for their own interest, the interest of few people, while the majority are suffering. So the continent is facing serious challenges, and these challenges are very much related to the leaders of Africa, and that's why they are coming up to blame the International Criminal Court, that it is for Africa. It is not doing justice to Africans. But Africans themselves have peculiar challenges.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, my brother. I think that your point is clearly well made. I didn't know many, many years ago when I was in university studying a bit of political science, my professors talking about the concept of presidential monarchs. I didn't know that, in fact, I would have the opportunity to experience that, even in situations where, of course, you have a facade of democracy, especially you keep being told we hold periodic elections. The quality does not matter. It does not matter whether the results reflect the will of the people, as you said, so long as somebody stays in State House. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Emina Woods, an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, Ani Akwete, Executive Director of the African Immigrant Caucus. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On a programming note, for the next couple of weeks, I will be on a special assignment in East Africa. So stay tuned for my colleague, Esther Gidui. You what? On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.